Welcome back to Sports Day. We're powered by Red Energy and Wilson Homes. As we come towards, well, what is a significant period in the tennis world, Jared, we thought we'd go live to one of the great correspondents in tennis. His name is Russell Fuller. He works for the BBC. He's joining us from Paris, and he's been good enough to talk all things tennis. Russell, welcome to Sports Day.
Good evening to the two of you. Hi.
Let's begin on a positive, Russell, because last night Joe Willie Songer bowed out in pretty competitive terms, won the first set, should have probably won another set, but he's been a crowd favourite here since he played off in the final, and what is he, 37-odd years of age, he played his final game to a rapturous reception.
What a way to go out. I mean, ultimately, it was really disappointing in that he had just got back in with a chance of taking it into a fifth set.
Yeah.
He was playing Casper Ruud of Norway, and he broke for 6-5 in the fourth set. At the change of ends, La Marseillaise was ringing around the Philippe Chatrier court, which was virtually completely full, and we looked like we were going into a fifth set. And it was only when he walked up to the line to serve that he realised that a muscle in his shoulder had just gone,
pop,
and he couldn't serve at more than about 75, 80 miles an hour. And after that, he was just rolling the ball in. He was broken back. He lost the tiebreak. But none of that really matters, as you say, because what a career. He won 18 ATP titles, and he reached the final in Melbourne, as you were saying, famously in 2008. And the ovation was just spine-tingling. And the presentation the French Federation put on for him, I tell you what, it set the bar very high for the high-profile retirements that are inevitably to come in the next few years. They had all his former coaches from childhood onwards walking out onto the court, his wife, his family, his two children, and pretty much every other French player, and a tribute on the big screen from Federer, Nadal, Djokovic and Andy Murray.
Yes, it was a brilliant moment. I've got great memories of watching him in that final against Djokovic. I was barracking for him. He's always played in the right spirit for mine, and we salute him on the way out. But it's been a really difficult time for tennis all round with the contentious banning of Russian players from Wimbledon. And I think at the time I thought it was the right thing to do. 6 weeks, 8 weeks down the track, I'm probably a little bit more reflective of that position. But it certainly became more contentious when the WTA and the ATP took away the points.
You've probably got a situation now where players are unhappy all round.
Yep.
Players were, for the most part, very unhappy with the All England Club and the British Lawn Tennis Association's decision to ban the Russians and Belarusians. But they are also, in large numbers, unhappy with the decision to take away ranking points, which I think it takes a bit of explaining this. And maybe those of us who never played the game can't really quite understand how important ranking points are. You'd think, look, you get a chance to play at Wimbledon, maybe on centre court. You get a chance to play for the title. You get a chance to earn up to £2 million for winning the title. And yet, without ranking points, some players, I think, are not going to have the motivation that they normally would have. And that's because it's such an important currency for the players, arguably more important than the cash in their pockets once they get to a certain level of comfort, because they use those ranking points to get entry to future tournaments. And if you're one of the best players in the world, it boosts your seeding and means you don't need to play the other top players until the last couple of rounds. You know how it works. And we've had players say, like John Isner, that he might just pitch up on the Saturday and play his first match on the Monday. Benoît Paire of France was furious about it yesterday. And Naomi Osaka has said she's leaning towards not playing at the moment because she just thinks it'll be weird without the ranking points there.
Yes, well, Naomi can find something weird about most things, but let's take her out of the conversation. Where do you sit on this particular issue, Russell? Did Wimbledon get it right, or has Paris got it right? And a third one, maybe the ATP and the WTA should have elected to freeze the points rather than say no points.
Well, that is certainly an option, and I suppose that is the one area where there might be some compromise potentially. I don't see how the All England Club change their position. They have done so because there was some serious pressure from the government to do so. The British government didn't mandate them to do it, which is why the ATP and the WTA felt that they should be taking ranking points off Wimbledon. But they certainly put a lot of pressure on behind the scenes, and there's a lot of money clearly that moves between the government and tennis and other sports. And last year, Wimbledon was pretty much the first British sporting event to play out to virtually full crowds after the pandemic. And as the All England Club and the LTA pointed out, that couldn't have been done without government support. I think they also think they're on the side of public opinion in the UK. They think it's the right thing to do, but the ATP and the WTA just take this view that it's discriminatory. You cannot do it. You cannot ban certain players from certain countries from playing, whatever the circumstances. As for my position, well, the beauty of being a BBC correspondent is that you are allowed opinions, but actually often you're allowed to sit on the fence, at least publicly, and present both sides of the argument.
Yes, it was.
I'm not sure if he took a position at all.
I think he had a picket right up the middle there at this stage. But we had a similar situation, and I was very strong on this when Djokovic was here. I mean, people say that Tyler's job was to get the best tournament available. I think, well, that's true to a point, but at no stage should you compromise, role as a civil participant in the country, and in particular in the state that you're in. I thought it was a wrong decision to invite him here. And the wrong decision to give him a spot.
And the wrong decision to try to bend the rules.
And the wrong decision to flex the rules or find loopholes. I mean, I think it's a little bit different. But then speaking to people like Mark Bosnich, in the world of soccer, they've banned teams like they have in tennis, but they haven't banned players. And it's a very, very different, difficult scenario, I think, the whole thing.
It's incredibly difficult because what happens if Russian troops are still in Ukraine in 12 months' time? Yeah. Do the All England Club take the same decision? And how about future conflicts and past conflicts? Yeah. Many people would point the finger at the UK and say, well, look, you had all those troops in Iraq and Afghanistan and nobody did anything about it then. So, yes, it's a very, very difficult precedent and potentially a very dangerous precedent for not just the All England Club, but other governing bodies in future years, which is why the ATP and the WTA, I mean, it's not quite a case of saying we'll always keep politics out of sport, but that's pretty much the message, that you cannot discriminate on nationality, however horrific the events might be in one particular country. What I would also say, though, is that tennis is a little bit of an outlier. People in tennis are horrified generally that this action has been taken by the All England Club, but there are plenty of other sports, as you know, that have taken action and they have banned individual athletes, not just the Russian and Belarusian teams.
Yes, it's a really difficult topic, and you could probably have a debate for an hour on it. But one that really took my eye overnight, and it's quite ironic, Scoop, given what happened here in Australia with our world-famous doubles team and the crowd behaviour around it, that Alex de Minaur overnight believed that the French fans at his match went over the line as he crashed out of the first round to a highly rated French youngster, Hugo Gaston.
I think we are seeing a bit of a pandemic response in life, perhaps, but certainly a sport all around the world. And I'm not excusing it when I say that, but I think definitely the crowds at the Australian Open, and we're perhaps seeing it in the early days of the French Open, they are a little bit more boisterous than they normally would be. So whether you call it lockdown fatigue or whatever, we've seen it in football in the UK as well. We've had a number of pitch invasions at the end of matches when teams have been promoted or they won the league title. Now, that used to happen back in the day, but it had pretty much stopped. And I think people kind of feel maybe that they have a license to do this. They're so excited at their team's success. They're exhilarated to be able to watch them without any restrictions. And maybe some of these unwritten rules, although in the case of invading the pitch, that is a written rule, but certainly within tennis, that way of behaving as a crowd is perhaps been forgotten a little bit. And I suspect we might see a little bit more of this.
Russell, we really appreciate your time. I know you're hard-pressed with it and you're very busy. Good luck.
What about a couple of tips before you go?
Oh.
A couple of tips for the day or the tournament as a whole?
No, the tournament in total.
Yeah, the tournament as a whole. Well, I'm fascinated to see how Iga Swiatek goes because it's now 29 wins in the row before her second round match tomorrow. She's the overwhelming favourite, but you can see her being beaten just because she's not been the favourite and the world number one in a Grand Slam before. I would say maybe Amanda Anisimova of the United States would be a good outside bet if she doesn't win. Mm-hmm. On the men's side, Stefanos Tsitsipas had all sorts of problems in the bottom half of the draw, winning in five sets last night. He would still be the favourite to come through that half of the draw. The top half is stacked with Carlos Alcaraz and Alex Zverev and Rafa Nadal and Novak Djokovic. I would go Djokovic purely because I think he's got a point to prove. And I think when he's fit and he's playing regularly, he's the best player in the world. And he won the Rome Masters without dropping a set just a couple of weeks ago. So I'd go for Djokovic in the men's.
Well, I thought you might have gone big and predicted a breakout of Alcaraz, but looks like he's going to have to wait for another couple. Well, Alcaraz anyway, but wait for another couple of tournaments. All the best, Russell, and thanks for your time.
Thanks, guys. Speak to you soon.
Russell Fuller, BBC tennis correspondent, reporting from Paris during Roland Garros. And, of course, Wimbledon not far away.
Have you been watching Alcaraz?
Yeah. I mean, you know that we were talking about him.
Yeah, the Australian Open.
Well, no, but two Australian Opens ago.
Was it?
We were talking about him.
I must have skipped one.
No, you were there. I think, it was the same year that that we were talking about this weird disease coming over from
the States. That's right.
Yeah. The AFL said that the China game might still go ahead.
Is the China game still on?
I think it's still on. I think it's back on this year. More sports day after this.